Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Robots Radio presents
The Cyberbuck Lorecast.
Welcome to the Cyberpunk Lorecast, where style is just as important as substance. Welcome to the podcast where we explore the lore, news, and gameplay of the Cyberpunk games and other dystopian worlds. I'm your host, Robots. Cyberpunks, welcome back to the show. This is your host, Tom, or Robots, and this is the Cyberpunk Lorecast, where we cover everything having to do with Cyberpunk, Cyberpunk 2077, Cyberpunk Red, and all sorts of other topics having to do with the Cyberpunk genre. And this week, we have a very special guest, somebody that you will recognize from some previous episodes of the show, Jay Gray from R. Telsorian Games, the man who knows more about Cyberpunk than I know about my own family.
That's not true.
It's probably true.
I mean, if that's the case, maybe I think you need to
spend more time with my family.
Shut down the broadcast right now and go spend some time with your family, man, because you don't get those years back.
Okay. Well, I do know a lot about my family, but you, to the point, know a lot about Cyberpunk because you work for R. Telsorian Games. So anybody who doesn't know and doesn't recognize you and hasn't listened to a previous episode that you have been on, You are basically the communications ambassador for R. Telsorian Games, the people who invented Cyberpunk.
The game, yes.
The game, not the genre.
We're not claiming to invent the genre.
The game.
The game, yes.
The game, the tabletop game that it created the whole tabletop game system that people have been playing for decades now, that spawned the whole reason why we got Cyberpunk 2077, that all of this stuff is based around, that this entire show was the whole concept for this whole show, right? All of that stuff. And you've guessed it on the show for a few times now. And every time you sit down and talk about it, everybody loves, and I get feedback about this all the time, everybody loves your passion for this stuff and your depth of knowledge. And so on our first post-Logan episode, I thought, who better to reach out to join me on the show than Jay Gray? So how you doing? How are things? How have you been?
We are good. We have RTG has released the Cyberpunk Red Data Pack, which is, I think we talked about on our last show.
Yeah.
Very cool collection of maps and screensheet adventures and additional, we call 20 things lists, which is 20, a series of 20 random things one can find in Night City, ranging from 20 hotspot nightclubs to 20 safe houses to 20 things you'll find in the dead guy's subdermal pocket.
That's right. Last time you were on, we did a random roll of just like, what would we find in just kind of a random thing? And we found a dead guy with a subdermal pocket. Yes.
We released the Netrunner deck, Netrunning deck, which has cards to make netrunning, which we'll talk about today easier. And Penny Arcade is carrying a 4-pin set for Cyberpunk Red, which it includes the guy on the cover of 2020, the woman on the cover of Cyberpunk Red, the giraffe, which anybody who has the core rulebook for Cyberpunk Red will know the giraffe as the giraffe-like yellow construction mech that shows up in a couple of photos, a couple of pictures, and we just released stats for it in Interface Red, which is a new product we just released, which is a collection of short articles. And it also has the Danger Gal logo, Danger Gal being the detective agency owned by Michiko Arasaka, a.k.a. Subaru's granddaughter.
Right. Very cool stuff. So there's a ton of stuff out there. If you're looking to dive deeper into the world of Cyberpunk, then there's a lot of new stuff that's out there. So just a reminder, go check that stuff out. But this episode specifically, Jay and I were throwing around some ideas, and we wanted to get deeper into the net and the way the origins of the net, the way the net has developed in the world of Cyberpunk, and the effects of the net, because the net's kind of a mysterious thing. It is. It's a dangerous thing. It's a mysterious thing. It is a place where AI runs rampant, where there's, I don't want to jump the gun on this, but I know you've been thinking about this. Where should we start when talking about the net? Do we want to start at the beginning?
Yeah, well, we start at the beginning, which is in the cyberpunk world, as we know, is an alternate parallel timeline to our own.
Right.
Where somewhere around the late 80s, early 90s, it splits off for a variety of reasons. There is the collapse where the United States and the world economy just falls apart. Climate change hits the no return point super early.
Really early.
Really early.
Do we know the reason for that in this universe? Were people just gobbling up oil reserves faster and burning more carbon into the air? Is there like a specific reason why that's different?
It's a combination of that and the fact that the deregulation of environmental protections were just stripped, just kept going straight through, because the Gang of Four, in addition, which are the people that caused a lot of the problems, a group of various shadow cabal of government agents and agencies and directors, they weren't interested in protecting the environment. They were interested in protecting their interests and making money running the show. And so they didn't care about
gruff men speaking with deep tones, always backlit and smoking. That's all four of them at all times.
Yeah, you'll all remember, if you're old enough, that once upon a time, everyone's like, you know, hairspray is bad for the environment. We can't do hairspray anymore.
Yes. And it's killing the ozone.
Yeah, that never happened. So the ozone layer just broke apart fairly early on, and climate change just hit harder and nastier than it did here. So there's that. And the rise of megacorporations, because megacorporations can pay for politicians, and megacorporations aren't interested in the environment. Keep in mind, Petrochem and Sovoil, two megacorps who are very obviously petroleum based.
Yes.
Fought a war.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
yeah. Can you imagine in our reality if like Exxon Valdez and I don't know, whoever the other biggest oil company is out there, just all of a sudden amassed armies and just sent them off to the Middle East to fight over. I mean, basically, this is the equivalent of the Middle East war being fought by oil companies rather than the United States and the Iraqis and whoever else was over there at the time.
Yeah. So back to the net, though. So it splits off. And part of the way it splits off is our internet never develops there. And the reason it doesn't is because very early on, they develop mind-machine interfaces. And so development of a global network shifts from what we think of, which is a hyperstack page system, the World Wide Web overlaid upon a network of computers, to a network of computers people can plug their brains into, either directly or indirectly. There were things called trodes, basically. Like suction cups you can attach to your head that allow you to experience a slower version of the net.
Those are the ones that you get at the library because they don't have as much money for the interfaces. Can you imagine walking through a public library and seeing a bunch of people with suction cups on their heads?
Well, they were like caps you would put on, but basically same idea. I mean, you could also do it with an old-fashioned way, a keyboard and a monitor, but the whole idea is basically the net development shifted from people accessing it on regular computers to people being able to access it with their brain.
Mm-hmm. Which we're getting closer and closer to, because we can like plug a monkey into a computer now and have them like draw things on a computer screen.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically, imagine if VR worked 30 years earlier really well.
Yeah.
And they said, everyone said, oh, well, why bother with screens when everybody could just put on these things and do
direct
VR.
Neural connection. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So it started, and at first it was fairly rough. The net in 2013, the original Cyberpunk, was a much rougher place. It was user dependent as opposed to, so the user bought the experience as opposed to the other way around. They had something called interfaces. So the way I was seeing the net was not the way you were seeing the net. It depended on the programs on your Cyberdeck. So for example, I might be seeing the net as castles and dragons and mountains and great rolling green fields.
Skyrim.
And someone else might be seeing the net. Yeah.
Skyrim, so, the net.
Skyrim.
Yeah.
And someone else might be seeing it as a, you know, Tron-esque grid kind of thing. And so that there was a lack of consistency, which often caused a lot of confusion. So I would say, I get together with someone on the net. I say, oh, can you go over there and get that dragon egg? And the other guy's not seeing the dragon egg.
Right.
So after 2013, a bunch of scientists get together and they put together, I think they're called Grubb-Imara interface algorithms. And what these do, the IG algorithms. So what these do is they transform the net. Everyone but one person plugs out of the net, jacks out. They run the algorithms, and then when you jack back in, it now becomes that the net tells you what you're seeing. You have consistency.
It's standardized. It's all consistent from that point on.
It's standardized. So, it does two things. It standardizes it so that when what I see is what you see. So, for example, Arasaka can create a net space that looks like an ancient Japanese fortress.
Right.
And everyone will see it that way. But the other thing it does is it overlays physical distance with net distance. So that if I am in a city and I am in front of, say I'm in Night City and I'm in front of Arasaka's node, which is right in Arasaka Tower, whichever version you like, and across the way is Militech's tower, and I'll see their tower and it'll look the same distance.
It's equivalent. Yeah.
Equivalent. I move much faster because I move at the speed of thought, but there's a sense of reality to the net that wasn't there before. But that goes on for on, and it all goes down to the one guy that didn't jack out that day, and his name was Rache Bartmos,
somebody that we have definitely heard of.
Yes. So Rache, as everybody knows, said, oh, well, this is a very pretty and cool thing they're doing, why don't I add something to it? And he had a data crash to it, which basically is, if he didn't communicate with his virus every so often with a dead man switch, essentially, it will go off. And the data crash hits in the Fourth World War, 2022. Within a month, 78% of the net's infected, I believe it is. And what it does is it swaps data from files. So, for example, say during the Fourth World War, Militech was sending orders to a platoon to go to these coordinates, X and Y, these geostationary coordinates on the map to hit this base. And instead, and this actually happened during the Fourth Corporate War, and instead the file just switched the coordinates, like one number in those coordinates with a number from another file.
Yeah. Yeah.
And suddenly they're hitting Petrochem space.
Right. Yeah. It just completely just went to the wrong location by one digit.
And so you got to realize by 2023, the net had over a decade of existence. Everyone was hooked into it. Everyone had bought into it. Think about how fast we adopted smartphones after the first iPhone came out.
Oh, yeah.
And how fast they became part of our life. Everyone bought into it. Everyone hooked into it. Everyone chose convenience over security. And so, so instead of saying, oh, well, I'm not going to hook my database full of important information to the net because it's more secure if it's not attached to the net, they said, I would rather have it, and I'll put in these black ice to watch it and keep people out so that people can, from distance, access it, and we can all work on it together. It was more convenient that way. But the end result being is large sums of human knowledge, and certainly most of the knowledge acquired since 2013, because by that point, why was anybody writing anything down on paper when the net existed in the first place?
Sure. You know, think about today. Most of what I write is written in a Google Doc digitally somewhere. Yeah. Absolutely.
So the end result being is, a large chunk of the world's information was corrupted. You couldn't read the instructions for a cookie recipe, much less the plans for a tank, and know for sure that you're going to make what you're supposed to make, or you're going to make something poisonous that will kill someone.
Right. Or the history of Egypt.
Yeah.
You know, like all of a sudden we have, the cookie recipes in the history of Egypt.
Yeah. Or, remember that
tank plans video.
Yeah, the video of Lee Harvey Oswald killing Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah, right. Yeah, what would be amazing is a fan written storybook of like the craziest things that happened during the data crash.
Yeah,
that would be a wonderful thing if anybody wants to do like stories of the data crash, like these just fun little like one off stories of like there was a time during the data crash where before anyone realized what was going on when this happened.
And I think about how it's like news anchors reading the wrong stories,
right?
Because that's what was handed to them, because they just read the stories. That's what they're paid to do.
They just read it off, and just only like one word was swapped, but it caused this crazy thing to happen because of this convergence of events. Because that could create some of the really really interesting stories.
Yeah. So in addition to that, Rachel also released Rabbits, roving autonomous Bart Moss something drones.
Which is different than Raymond's rabbits, which are crazy looking aliens that look like rabbits that are
the rabbits wouldn't insane. Get along with Mario.
No. Although that was an amazing game. That game was great.
It was. I'm led to understand that it is a great tactical RPG.
It is. It is a really good game. And the sequel, they're still working on the sequel. It's going to come out at some point.
So the rabbits are out there, and so not only is data being swapped and messed with, but anyone who attaches the Jackson to the net is being attacked by these insane shark things, essentially. Mm-hmm. So the end result being NetWatch tries to fix it, NetWatch can't fix it. They start shutting down nodes, they start telling people not to go in, corporations start being smart and air gapping their databases. Eventually, by the 2030s, cities begin building in North America through the Ziggurat Corporation.
Okay.
City nets, small, comparatively, networks built on the backs of the old data terms.
Local nets.
Local nets. Imagine, and it happens. So you get like Night City has a network, and Chicago has a network, and LA has a network.
Right, but they're isolated. They're not locked. They're not attached to
others.
They
talk to each other, but in very controlled ways. Mm. Like there are, for example, data bursts where we'll send information to you and you'll send information to me maybe once an hour in a very controlled burst. Mm-hmm. That burst will be, scanned to make sure there's nothing bad in it.
Right.
Because NetWatch is understandably paranoid that a rabbit will get into this system or something like a rabbit will develop. That'd be horrible, because the rabbits are like AIs. This is one of the reasons why they're so paranoid about AIs in 2077.
Yeah.
And then eventually you get more connectivity until you get to 2077, where you still have, there are still city nets, but there's more connection to the point where in Red, you can't do net running from a distance. You have to be on the spot. You have to jack into the building. T-Bug and a few others can do net running in 2077 through some very special ways that I can't really talk about because they haven't gone in depth with it to 2077, but it involves interesting interactions with the way with old and new nets.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. It's almost like this is a future version of like walled cities. Mm-hmm. It's really what it is. Like you have walled systems, you have these walled nets, which are like walled cities, and the gates open and everything is checked before it leaves. and everything is stopped at the city gates and is checked before it comes in, and then the city gates are closed. And then at certain times, the city gates are allowed to open again, and then things are sent out, and things are allowed in, and then the city gates are closed again. And at all other times, the city guard stands there, and they don't let anything in or out, unless by order of the king, it is allowed to open. Right?
Yeah, I mean,
that's it.
I mean, essentially what they're doing is plague control.
Yeah.
They're making sure that if a new form of rabid or something similar shows up in Night City, it won't infect it will just infect Night City. It won't get out to the rest of the net. And Netwatch is fastidious about it. No one wants that again. You know, I'm sure Ziggurat would like to open up more because Ziggurat would make more money that way.
Yeah.
But you don't want to upset Netwatch at this point. And you don't want to upset your customer base because everyone remembers the fourth corporate war.
Because it'll tank everything again. Everybody loses. Now, what's the significance of the name Ziggurat?
Ziggurat was founded by a person named UR. Mm-hmm. That is their name, UR. Right. No, not Ur. But, UR.
Right, right. But like the city of Ur.
Yeah.
Like the ancient city of Ur, which had ziggurats in it.
Yeah, there's a lot of Babylonian underpinnings to the ziggurat concept. Basically what it was when we sat down and we said, okay, we need some new corporations that have risen since the end of the fourth corporate war. We talked about Zarafa, which is a Russian construction and drone company. Uh-huh. We talked about Continental Brands, which is a food company. It's like, it all depends on what your thoughts are on Trader Joe's, but it's like an evil Trader Joe's.
Evil Trader Joe's. Right. Some people might say that Trader Joe's is evil. I get what you're saying. So that's kind of redundant.
But imagine a Trader Joe's that's like more puts evil. Up a store and then starts, you know, sending goon squads to shut down the neighboring bodega.
I see. Pay us protection money. Or we're going to shut down your store.
Yeah. So Ziggurat was, the basic idea is we had to, it started with, we just want a new media corporate. And we were thinking, well, there are these networks, someone's controlling them. Mm-hmm. Who's it going to be? And we went through the ideas and we're like, oh, and then we thought about AOL. And if you remember America Online, we're like, America Online thing was a pyramid.
Right. Yeah.
From there, you know, like, oh, well, what if it was something similar, you know? And we're like, in a way, the net's sort of like back then when you had AOL and Prodigy and CompuServe, mm-hmm. you know, where you had these individual networks, but they're city-based instead of dial-based. Mm-hmm. And so like, okay, well, Ziggurat worked. And from there, this the whole thing came together.
That's cool. Yeah, I like the connections to the like old naming concepts. Okay. So at this point, we're up to what, the 2030s?
We've gone through the 2045, 2030s is when they start building the new city nets and mm-hmm. they put over the city nets in the same way that, the World Wide Web, is not actually the internet. It is the way we interact with the internet.
Right.
If you think about it that way, but we use the terms interchangeably. So they put up, and then they put up the data pools, which is the same thing. The data pool is the way you interact with the city net. And the data pool is a shared open system that anyone can contribute to. They can load sites onto the data pool. They can upload files to the data pool. Basically, it's a user-driven content site, whether that user is a large corporation or an individual person. And it goes on from there. Eventually, it hits the net we see in 2077, which is, they didn't explore the basic information data structure networks, you know, the everyday stuff. You get to use V's computer to look at some websites, essentially. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, it hasn't actually, from what I can tell, it hasn't advanced that much in the 30 years or so between Red and 2077, possibly because Netwatch is saying, hey, no, whoa, wait, let's take it slow and make sure everything's okay. Let's make sure we don't make any new AIs.
Right.
That will try to destroy the world again.
Right. So, so let's talk about the AIs. Let's talk about what happened after the crash, the emergence of the AIs.
Yes.
And where all of that stuff exists, because that's out there somewhere. And some people are trying to interact with that stuff. We've talked about this before, the different kinds of AIs, the emergent AIs, the AIs that were used to be human, and then they're not, they're out there somewhere not human anymore, and now they're some sort of weird thing. And then the AIs that, like, we wouldn't even be able to begin to communicate with them because they're so far not human in any way that how would we even begin to find some sort of common ground to even talk? Like, where do those exist?
Okay, so here's the thing to think about. Number one, Cyberpunk Red is not so different. Cyberpunk, the world, is not a mystical place. Mm-hmm. It is not a place where magic exists. Therefore, the net, while it may have certain mystical overtones to certain people, people could put religious and spiritual components to it. Sure. It is not inherently that. It's not another dimension. It's not the astral plane. It is a network of physical computers and servers. And so your first question you have to ask is, if these horrible things, these rabbits, all this stuff is on the old net, why isn't NetWatch just going around
turning them off?
Turning them off.
If you could track down every server that these things are running on and just unplug them, just turn the power off, each of them just sequentially, just power down. Problem solved.
And by 2077, they've had half a century to do that, haven't they?
Right. That's all. You don't even have to blow them up. In fact, all you have to do is just get, you know, just find them all, turn the power off.
Yeah.
That's it.
So, you know, so, and the answer to that is because, well, two reasons. A, there's a lot of potential lost knowledge on there that you want to be able to get to. You know, there's riches beyond measure. There is digital treasure there.
Right.
And everyone's reluctant to let that go. The other thing is, someone lives there. We call them ghost cities. We mentioned Hong Kong. There's a couple others, places where, for one reason or another, humanity had to leave, but there was a decent infrastructure left in place so that with some help of some drones, the local net, the AIs can essentially live there and maintain those systems. And the thing is NetWatch can't do quickly what they need to do with the Blackwall on their own. So I'm not saying they made some deals, but I'm saying maybe they made some deals. So you just think about that. You know, if NetWatch, who by the time by 2077 are a global police force who can, you know, send an agent in, and that agent can, you know, hire a gang and try to shut down the voodoo boys, surely they can start sending agents to all these, hiring edge running teams, send them all over the world, shut down these servers. So there's a reason why they're not. And that reason is, you know, not just going to be about, you know, deals have been made. I'm just saying, you know, what do they say in Hamilton? No one was in the room.
Yeah. Right. So do you think, okay, I mean, obviously, you know, I'm just speculating here because I don't. If there is a power broker among the AIs who's able to influence human behavior, and that power broker can use the wealth of the information that's left on the internet in order to broker humans to do what they need them to do, then in that amount of time, in half a century, the servers and the physical infrastructure needed for the AIs to continue doing what they need to do, could it by that point be anywhere?
Isn't that interesting?
Theoretically, they could have had humans build them power sources and servers anywhere on the planet or off the planet, wherever they wanted them to be, in a safe location, and then even brokered a way for humans to have forgotten where they were put.
Yeah. Keep in mind, the AIs, artificial intelligences don't need cities.
They don't need to be
in one place.
All they need is to get a person to give them the keys to manipulate even just a robotic entity to start doing the things that they need them to do. and in the physical world in order to leverage that, and then that could snowball into getting the things that they want in physical space in order to manage doing what they need in digital space.
Yeah.
And given enough time, they can make that work out for them however they need.
Yeah, absolutely. There is no reason why an AI cannot use a drone or a doll.
Or a doll. Or a human whose brain they somehow tap into because they have enough augments in their brain and eventually take over their brains if they could figure out how to do that because their AIs. Is a doll. Right, that is a doll. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Yeah, but you're right. No, you know, who knows? Who knows? You know, who was running the experiment on the politician and his wife? All kinds of interesting questions.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was an AI. I honestly don't know if that was an AI or not. I know that there's hints that, you know, something was involved and that it was some shadowy cabal. I don't know if it was AI. I like to think that's a really cool. The AIs are trying to figure out if they can influence human societal development that way. Right. And I like the idea that the AIs aren't a unified mass. And we get hints of that, don't we?
Yeah.
Here and there. For example, it's a very strange, one of the cyber psycho missions involves this maelstrom who was in a fridge. I don't know if you remember this one, in like some kind of this maelstrom ganger who was in a fridge lying on the ground. They were in the fridge. There was a whole ritual going on, and then you fight her and she zips around the field, and it's a really annoying fight. Afterwards, you can find the data chart that talks about it. They're doing like a ritual to Lilith to reach beyond the black wall. And you're like, is Lilith an actual AI who's trying to influence the maelstrom? And if so, A, to what end? B, is it possible that some AIs are acting independently of other AIs and carrying out their own agendas? Because why should AIs get along any more than humans do?
Right. Right. Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, if they're their own persons, they have their own identities. The thing that's so interesting to me about this is how they are all. So if they're all working and processing on a network together, then they're all limited by the processing power of that network.
Possibly. Yeah. Soul Killer, for example, the original Soul Killer, the first Soul Killer 1.0, the one alt developed before she was kidnapped by Arasaka, was a stationary program.
Okay. So it only ran on a computer system?
It was too big to go out into the net.
Right, right.
It was just too big. It would be like trying to stream every movie at once to try to get out there.
Right, right.
Soul Killer 2.0, it was a little better. By the time they hit Soul Killer 3.0, which is what they use in the Fourth Corporate War, it was fully mobile, semi-intelligent, and able to mimic people, go into people's histories, find out about their friends, learn who their friends were, even absorb their friends, and then mimic the people it had soul killed.
Yeah, yeah. So here's my thinking on this, is once you get to these advanced AIs that can basically be transient on the net, they can exist on the internet, on whatever server that is currently running on multiple servers. Basically, they are distributed systems. If you think of it like that. And so you could have thousands or millions or however many of these can exist on that system based on whatever the server load is for these AIs. They just kind of exist on whatever systems they need to in order to continue existing and moving wherever they need to go, right?
Right.
But there is a physical limit based on processing power.
Right.
So there's going to be competition for limited resources. Theoretically,
you are probably you might be right there. Who knows what that competition is and how it works and how much you need. But there is a limit to that thought in that it needs to be recognized that our cyberpunk in general, the genre, does treat the computer, the network, the matrix, almost like
an unlimited resource,
an unlimited mystical realm.
Right.
Because the thing is that it all roots back to Tron.
Right. Yes.
You know,
this magical place where all computer things just kind of do their thing, and who knows how it works.
It all roots back because Tron was a formative experience of a virtual space for just about everybody.
Yeah.
Of the 80s. And that's where, you know,
I remember
Gibson didn't know anything about computers, but Gibson had seen Tron.
Yeah.
So that's what, you know, NetSpace is in Neuromancer. It's basically, you know, a gritty Tron. He's not really thinking about things. It's we actually, when we wrote Red, at the very beginning of Red, it has the Never Fade Away story, which is the story that, of Johnny and Alt and how Alt was kidnapped and how Johnny almost rescued her and prevented her from rescuing herself. And in the original version of that, I think we have this very, we say Soul Killer was massive because it took up this many megabytes. Right. It's an embarrassingly small amount of megabytes.
I remember pointing this out on that, on like really early on in the show when I was reading through that portion. It was like 32 megabytes. It was something. Yeah. 64 megabytes.
Like, it was less than what it's less than an app on your phone these days.
Yeah.
So, I mean, eventually in Cyberpunk itself in 2020, we realized that we couldn't keep up with the technology. The technology was advancing at such a rate, and memories becoming cheaper and cheaper, and hard drives becoming bigger and bigger. So we eventually stopped saying megabytes or gigabytes. We just started saying memory units. It takes up 3 memory units. We never defined what a memory unit is.
Right.
But in Red, we changed it. We made some small alterations to the story for that reason. So Never Fade Away no longer says it takes up this many megabytes. We just say it's so big that it can't, you know,
It
can't leave the server.
Right.
You know, it's the same reason I think we did that, and we changed, like, I think there was like a Smith & Wesson gun in there, and we changed some brand names.
Yeah.
I think the only brand name that we kept was Porsche, because CDPR had a deal with Porsche to put the Johnny's Porsche specifically in the game.
Yeah.
So it shows up in our story.
That's cool. Well, hey, you know what? We got to take a quick break to thank our patrons, but we'll be right back because I've got some more questions. And I know some of our viewers, our live viewers on Twitch, have some questions as well. So feel free to toss them in chat if you have some questions for Jay Gray from R. Talsorian. And we'll be right back.
Hey.
Hey, Simone.
Yes, Chad.
What would you say is your favorite bad movie?
Oh, where would I start? But probably at Zombie Strippers.
Oh, yeah, which we've actually done on our podcast, Fresh Tomatoes, the movie podcast. This is a podcast where we take some of the worst movies ever created, and even some of those movies that you might have thought were brilliant, but still got a bad critic score, and we say nice things about them, because you know what? Someone put the effort in, so we're gonna be there, fighting in their corner.
Absolutely, Chad. Even if the movie was total garbage, there is some makeup artist that gave it their all, and we're here to recognize that.
Exactly. And with really fun themes every week, such as National Treasure Week, Weddings Week, movies with Jeremy Irons and dragons in them. How could you go wrong by joining us every Tuesday and Thursday for some optimism in your life?
And like we say at the end of every episode, we love you and there's nothing you can do about it.
We love you and there's nothing you can do about it. Goodbye.
All right. This is the part of the show where I get to thank our awesome patrons, all 19 of you. And thank you so much, guys. You are what helps me do this show every week and keep it going. And I really do appreciate it. So thank you to all of our patrons, all of our upgraded patrons, all our Night City mercs. And we have multiple tiers now. So go check that out. So if we've done anything to help you get through your workday, your drive to work, your workout, or, you know, cleaning your keyboard, because when was the last time you cleaned your keyboard? I mean, be honest with yourself. Our keyboards are dirtier than our handles on our doors, even, because when was the last time? I mean, you wash your hands all the time, but when do you wash your keyboard? Go clean your keyboard. And while you're doing that, listen to this podcast and type in patreon.com/cyberpunklorecast and go check out all the different tiers, because you can get ad-free episodes, you can get episodes a day early, you can get to join us on a future episode of the show, which is coming up. Our end of the show patron chat is coming up on the 28th, and man, we had an awesome time watching Ghost in the Shell yesterday. We all watched that, and we had a wonderful little group of ours watching that together and talking about the cyberpunk elements in that, and we will be discussing that at the end of the month in 2 weeks on the 28th. So on the 28th, at the end of the day, so that's 9:00 Eastern, we'll be all talking about that. And there's plenty of time to join us if you want to sign up for tier 4 for that. I believe it's tier 4. It's the fully upgraded tier. And so there's all sorts of other stuff on there, including t-shirts. We now have t-shirts with all the different burrows. I guess they're called burrows. of Night City, different little sections of Night City.
Districts.
That's the word. Boroughs are like New York City. Districts of Night City. See, this is why Jay Gray's on the podcast. But go check those out. Each shirt is designed around a different district and, you know, all sorts of other cool stuff. But thanks again to all of our patrons. You guys are the best. All right, let's get back to the show. You know, with the net, the way it is, it's this like you said, it's kind of like this mystical experience kind of thing out there. It's kind of this like dangerous world. There's a lot of parallels to me between some of the things going on with Cyberpunk and also other fantasy worlds. And we talked about this with like the walled cities and, you know, the walled net and that being like a walled city. You also have the concept of fairy. And this is something that J.R.R. Tolkien drew a lot of inspiration from. And have you studied much of Tolkien's work? Obviously, Tolkien was formative.
Teeny tiny bit. I read me some Silmarillion.
Yeah. So he was formative in fantasy, which has influenced so much of our you know, sci-fi and fantasy and everything over the last, I don't know, 70, 80, you know, almost 100 years now. But in the realm of fairy, there's this sense of moving from the familiar to the unfamiliar, from the here and now to the beyond. That the realm of the what is comfortable and normal to the realm that is other and potentially dangerous and unknown, where things don't work the way they seem. And that's what's there's an element of that in Cyberpunk, and the net is that. It is that element of the other, this place where you could as a netrunner jack in and you could try to go through and break your way in and be in this world that is like the other. And there are elements where these fairy creatures, these AI, could potentially break into your realm and, you know, temporarily show up in your reality and mess around with your reality in some way and then go back into their realm. You know, like there are elements here that kind of have parallels to that.
Well, there is. If you think about it for a second. Aliens do not exist openly.
As far as
Cyberpunk universe,
as far as we know.
Yes, as far there is no, like I said, we're talking about earlier, there's no magic, there's no vampires in Cyberpunk, main Cyberpunk. The alternate reality Night's Edge supplement from Ionis Games, notwithstanding published back in the 90s. Likewise, we focus the science fiction on the near future to make it the world outside your window cranked up to 11. That's why there's not anti-gravity. That's why there's not teleporting. That's why there's not a whole bunch of, you know, certain technologies.
Yeah.
And that's why there's no aliens.
Right.
But there are non-human intelligences. So AIs are the aliens of the cyberpunk world.
Yeah. Just like in fantasy, fairies or elves or gnomes or whatever are the aliens of that world.
I mean, you're talking the elves are weird, but you can basically understand them. They're two legs, two arms, two eyes. Mm-hmm. You know, they fall in love. They hate things. They lust for power. They eat food.
Right.
Dwarves.
Right.
Halflings. But you get to the fairies, and the fairies are saying, "Here, eat this thimble." You know, it becomes Wonderland.
It's weird.
And it makes no sense.
Their motivations don't make any sense. Yeah, and that was his point. And he studied myths from history. He was a philologist. He studied the origins of language, and in studying these origins of language, like he translated Gawain and the Green Knight, and he translated Beowulf, and these old stories from, you know, 600 years ago, and the world was different back then. And oftentimes in those mythologies, it was hard to understand the reasoning like behind the things the fairies wanted the humans to do. Oftentimes they didn't make any sense. And that feeling of like you would come across in Cyberpunk and you might interact with an AI and you have no sense of why the AI would want you to do a thing because their motivations are alien to you.
Well, I mean, and isn't that a really cool adventure idea?
Yeah.
An AI through a fixer hires an edge runner group to deliver, to take an empty cardboard box and put this empty cardboard box in this spot at this exact, in this exact spot in this exact time. That's it.
Right.
It makes absolutely no sense.
Right.
There's no reason anyone would want to do it, but they're paying you 1,000 eddies to do it. Right.
Right.
And it's just the tip of the iceberg. And then you can go deeper and deeper into why, you know, it turns out that because that box was there, a car had to swerve out of the way of the road and crashed into a building. And because they crashed into the building, the structural support was weakened.
Right.
And so when an earthquake came the next week, the building collapsed.
Yeah. And somehow the AI had some sort of foreknowledge about all those things, but had also influenced a number of those other things so that those things all happened. And that all that stuff was directed. Yeah, like you could totally set up all that stuff. Yeah, it's
absolutely.
It's such a cool idea. This anytime you have to deal with the realm of the other and the motivations that don't make sense to humans or are beyond the scope of our ability to understand, whether through temporal limitations or through physical limitations or informational limitations. And that's another thing that I think is really interesting. Go ahead with what you're going to say, because I've got some other thoughts on this too.
Okay. So in Cyberpunk Red, a Netrunner gets 3 actions every round, as opposed to the 1 action that people get in Meatspace. And that is because you're moving faster because you're moving at the speed of thought. You're moving at the speed of the processor of your Cyberdeck.
Yeah.
An AI has to be much faster, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
We've all seen what the X-Men movies with Quicksilver.
Or right.
The Flash TV show, right? And we're seeing, and you know, they're running really fast and the world's in slow motion. And, you know, they're able to take the bullets and turn them around because they're just hanging in midair. That's probably what it's like for an AI all the time. Can you imagine having to interact with a human being?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We've got to be like idiots on some level.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like going back to Tolkien. It's like, it must be like hobbits interacting with the Ents. The Ents take so long to decide anything.
Right. Or the idea of being an immortal person, like simply the idea of being an elf who lives forever in a Tolkien story, and being a mannish creature, you know, human who lives for 80 years or something like that.
Yep.
You know, like you can't possibly understand my reasoning for doing this because you're only going to live 80 years. I'm thinking 1,000 years in the future for my reasoning of why I want to do this thing. So you can't understand my reasoning, you know? And by the way, I've lived for 60,000 years already, you know, or being a vampire in a vampire story, right? So AI would have reasons well beyond the lifetime of people because they have no sense of, you know, having, you know, thinking only in the terms of like, and most humans are thinking not in the terms of 80 years. We're thinking like, I'm hungry now, or I want to do this tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. And AIs don't get hungry.
Yeah.
They don't get tired. They don't have hormones.
Right. Their moods don't change based on biological impulses.
Mm-hmm. And Alt says this, you know, she says, I've been in this computer or the thing that was Alt Cunningham at one point specifically says in 2077, spoilers for anyone who hasn't played the game yet, for literally a year almost now.
Right.
She says, you know, it comes down to, I have been here so long. I have been in AI so long. I've been outside my body for so long. There's barely any Alt Cunningham left inside of me. I have become someone else entirely. And it's something we hint at in the books too, is that divorced from biology, the mind does not develop in the same way because our mind is in our brain and our brain is biology.
Right.
We have a game called Castle Falkenstein, which is a fantasy alternate history steampunk game. It takes place in the 1870s in an alternate universe where Captain Nemo is sailing the seven seas in his Nautilus. And,
cool.
Sorcerers are gathering in clubhouses in London, and fairies exist. Fairies are energy beings from the space between worlds, from the space between dimensions. And they come to Earth and they take on shapes based on what they see. And so like a cat Sith fairy will have seen a cat and become a version of a cat. And a brownie, the first brownie, saw a man, but the man was very far away.
Mm-hmm.
So they became a small man.
Like a little tiny man.
Because they didn't understand perspective.
Perspective, right.
Because it was all new to them, because they don't have sight in the fairy realms. But the point is, you know, they are beings of energy. And because they're beings of energy, they have a very different motivations, even though they can seem human at times. But B, they have programming. Because no matter how many experiences that brownie has, or all those brownies have, because the brownies are almost like templates of each other, so all the brownies are somewhat similar, they all have to be brownies in the end. They can't not be brownies, because that's who they are. That's part of the programming. And AIs are going to have that too. In addition, you know, they transcend the limits of biology, but they don't necessarily transcend the limits of programming.
Right.
You know, Delamain, at some level, you know, for the rest of existence, no matter what you do with Delamain, some version of Delamain is going to be a dispatcher for a cab company.
Right, right.
You know, think about it. Delamain, if you read the data files on Delamain, the data charts, Delamain started off as like what we call a pseudo AI, basically an expert system, not actually intelligent, installed to help them reduce manpower and coordinate their caps.
Right,
and
just their cap do service. This one job and do it really well.
Yeah, this one job.
Yep.
Delamain, for whatever reason, because this happens a lot in Cyberpunk, AIs, truly intelligent AIs are very hard to make, but they do sometimes just happen. And so this pseudo AI developed into a full AI, eventually took over, and instead of gaining freedom or going off to do something else or something beyond Blackwall to join the other ones, it went from being a dispatcher for a cab company to being a dispatcher for a cab company it owned.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Right.
Because that's what Delamain was. That's what Delamain's programming was. In fact, in a bizarre sort of way, the Delamain mission is about whether Delamain's going to surpass his programming in any way. But even if it does, I'm guessing 100 years from now, no matter where Delamain is, part of Delamain is going to be, I need to organize this thing, these series of things to do things.
Right.
Because that's what I do.
Yeah, it's an organizing program. So on some level, it will always be an organizing program.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Delamain, I think, is one of the most interesting stories that I wished they had been able to develop, to explore more. You know, it would have been really neat to have gone into Delamain, like link into Delamain and examine his history. That would have been cool. But I mean, they do a really good job of the environmental storytelling with the various lore shards and the computer screens and emails you can read throughout the Delamain complex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I enjoyed the diversity of Delamains you also ran into in the world.
Yes.
And the different, like I thought, oh, this is a video game thing, and I'm just going to keep running into the same, you know, variant of it. I, you know, initially I thought, oh, they're all going to malfunction the same way when I saw the first one. And then I got to the second one, and I was like, oh, this one's completely different.
Well, and
okay. And then I was like, okay, I'm so glad this didn't go the way I thought it would.
Well, it's like, what, the episode of Teen Titans, if you're a fan of the show, of the
original series. I haven't watched the show,
there's an episode where they go into Raven's head and they meet different colored ravens, and each raven's an emotion.
Mm.
So it's kind of the same idea. I think, you know, they never specifically say what caused Delamain to develop this thing. I personally think it's because Delamain had grown to this point where, you know, it was no longer just an organizing dispatcher that happened to own its own thing. It was trying to understand and grow as an organism, as a person, so to speak.
Yeah.
And in doing so, it developed these different personalities, which split through its network and copies of itself.
Yeah. And each of those personalities had some very different, very personality-like responses to what was going on. Some of them were very afraid, and some of them were very, just very strong feelings about what you know, their reaction to what was going on, which was really interesting. Well, we're getting close to the end of the episode, and I want to make sure that first of all, thank you for this really cool conversation about the net. But I definitely want to point out what I think is some of the coolest news about Cyberpunk Red, and we talked about this a little bit during the pre-show.
Yes.
Roll 20.
Yes.
Cyberpunk Red is coming to Roll20. And if you guys don't know what Roll20 is, if any of you guys have played Dungeons & Dragons or a number of other tabletop role-playing games online on your browser, then you may have done so using the Roll20 system, where what they do is basically they consolidate it all into a browser where you can build a character, and then you can also play this online with other people using their systems, their sheets, information, even just like clicking a stat in order to roll your dice and all sorts of things. It makes it really, really easy. I've used this before with the Dungeons and Dragons lore cast when we've played with our patrons. I actually used this years ago when I did my own Dungeons and Dragons show. But the fact that they're bringing Cyberpunk Red to Roll20 is huge news. And this was just announced. Was this today?
It was today.
Wow.
Roll20 is having a online convention, basically the various games. Today was their big announcement show. And among the various announcements they made was that Cyberpunk Red will be hopefully next month be brought to Roll20 on a professional officially supported level. Up until now, we've had fans making character sheets, people you could fill out and play with, but there hasn't been official support with the ability to fully access the rule set. So we're hoping to, I can't talk too much about it because the truth is there's a lot about it I don't know yet. I have a rough idea, but that's being developed by other people in RTG, the Cyberpunk team is, not me directly. Mm-hmm. So, and Roll20 is the ones who gets announced. But the idea is that you'll be able to go in, you'll be able to get the Cyberpunk Red module, right. And then you'll be able to take advantage of it. All of Roll20's various cool shortcuts, like hopefully things like being able to drag an NPC or a weapon right from the rules into your character sheet, yeah. Or into the game.
Yeah.
So we're looking forward to that.
Yeah, this makes building a character so much easier. You've got all the sheets in front of you. You've got all the, like, basically a character sheet where you get to just type in your character name. You get to choose your character class. You get to choose, you know, like, deck out your character with the weapons, all the things that you want your character to have. All the stats and things are all right there. The person who's going to referee the game has access to all the things that they need to ref the game. NPCs, settings, information, all the stuff that they would need to set up the campaign that you're going to go on. And for people in our community who would be interested in doing something like a Cyberpunk Red game, but they don't have people like in their meat space around them, or they're in a situation where, you know, we're still in a pandemic and it's just not super convenient to bring people into your home or to go down to the local, you know, comic or, you know, game store in order to sit down with a bunch of people you don't necessarily know very well at a table and breathe each other's, you know, particulate matter in because you're just not comfortable about it. This is the kind of thing where you guys could just, you know, you get on the Discord, you get in a voice chat, and you'll load up Roll20. And as long as one of you is willing to ref the game, the rest of you just kind of build characters out, and then the ref sets up the rest of it, and you guys could just play. And it's that easy. It's such a cool idea. And it's only about a month out, man. I hope some of you guys take up this idea because, like, I don't know, being able to play a Cyberpunk Red game together online with other people in the community, because a lot of you guys are awesome. Just, it sounds like a ton of fun. I hope some of you guys take this. I don't get anything from Roll20. Roll20, if you're listening, you're welcome to sponsor the show. That would be awesome. But I don't know if they're listening. But this would be awesome. It's a great system. I've used it before. This sounds like a blast.
It is. This is our first foray into official support for virtual tabletop, which is what Roll20 is VTT. The more people who support it, the more likely we are to do more stuff with it in the future. It is not free for us to do it, to do this. There's costs and labor involved. There's a lot of coding, and it's something that we approached cautiously, and we tried to work out all the details so we understood what was going on. But people are using it. That would be great, because if they do, then we will look at it for other games. We'll do it for modules down the road, making sure other Cyberpunk stuff is in there the same way that D&D stuff is in there, because they also announced like the new Magic School supplement for D&D is going to be on there and stuff like that. We want it to be there. But it's got to be the thing where we have to make sure that, we're a smaller company, product failures cause us not be able to pay bills, which is bad.
Yeah. Things have to succeed.
Sometimes we approach newer things a little bit more slowly than other people, but we want it to be there. So please support us.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah. Also, this is a really fun idea. If you are planning on streaming any tabletop games, this works really well for that too, because of the visual component. You're able to put this up on the screen and play the adventure with each other, and then show things on screen for your viewers to be able to see, like, your stat sheets and some of the elements in the game. And, you know, like, oh, this is the gun I'm using, and this is the character sheet for the NPC, and all of that stuff. It makes it a lot easier for streaming as well. So go check it out once it's actually up. Hopefully we get some more information about that in the future. I'll be able to fill you guys in on that as well. I know this is something that Almighty Crit and his crew are going to absolutely go bonkers over for the Cyberpunk show. But do you have any other cool news or anything else you want to share before we head out?
We will be at PAX Unplugged in December. It's like the 12th to the 14th, I believe, in Philadelphia. If you are vaccinated, because they do require vaccination, please come by and see us. We would love to have you. We have a nice booth right on the floor right next to our friends at Monster Fight Club, who will be showing off the Cyberpunk Red Combat Zone game. So we're pretty excited about doing our first in-person convention in 2 years.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. If any of you guys can go make it to that, definitely let us know. Pop in and, you know, send us a note on the Discord and let me know that you guys got to go say hi. And man, I wish I could be up there. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, cons are great. And this one's a nice one. The PAXs are very well run.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've never had the opportunity to go to a PAX. But one year I'll make it.
Someday. You get a press pass.
That would be awesome. I know, right? Yeah, one day I'll do it. Well, thank you again for joining me, Jay. And what's the best way for people to follow what you're doing and reach out to you?
Oh, yeah, just over at Twitter at @RTellsOrienGames. Is probably the single easiest place. So you can go visit us on the web at rtalzoriangames.com or visit our web store at Talzorian Games or Talzorian Store. It's been a while since I've been to our site. I remember
I do that too.
Talzorianstore.com. Those are probably the best ways. If you search Discord for us, we're a public server. Our Talzorian Games server, we'd be there too. Or, you know, just drop me a note over at the, I keep an eye on the Cyberpunk chat over at your Discord. So you can just drop me a note there and I'll be happy to answer.
Yeah. He pops into the Robots Radio Discord as well. So you're always welcome to pop in there and just kind of ask him a question. I'm sure he'd be happy to answer and join in the chat. So yeah, thanks for being part of our community as well. People love hearing you talk about these things. So.
Oh, I love talking about it.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us again. And you guys know how to get a hold of my stuff, robotsradio.net for all the shows on the network. And I will be back in just a few minutes, about 30 minutes from now, for the Mass Effect Lorecast. We have another episode of that coming out in just a little bit. I will be back live for that. So I'll keep the stream up. So you're welcome to hang out. And if you're not staying for that, please come join me tomorrow morning. I'm continuing to stream on my YouTube channel, the Robots Radio YouTube channel, where I will continue my extreme Skyrim playthrough. We're doing an extreme roleplay of my character in Skyrim. I'm also going to be dabbling with, I've downloaded some mods for like character design stuff. And I think I might try making characters that look like other content creators on stream. And then sending them like pictures of themselves, because that would be really fun.
I have two words for you for Skyrim mod: rocket boots.
Rocket boots?
Rocket boots.
Is that a mod?
Yeah, there is a rocket boots mod.
Oh man, I have to go look this up. I've been having a lot of fun.
It is absolutely hilarious because the boots go off and you have no control over where they go. They just send you flying across Skyrim.
This sounds amazing. Okay, I have to look that up as well. So yeah, we're gonna have some wacky times playing Skyrim on the Robots Radio YouTube channel. So come join me in the mornings every weekday for that. And you can see it over my shoulder if you are watching us live or looking at the YouTube version of this. That sexy Santa suit behind me with the boobs. Yeah, that's stream picked that out for me. And if we hit our viewer goal, which isn't that high, guys. We got within 3 viewers of it last week. I will have to wear that on stream. And I look really good in it. So that I was being sarcastic. All right. Well, thank you for everybody for joining me. Thanks, Jay, for being here. I'm sure I'll see you again soon. And we'll be back for another Cyberpunk Lorecast next week, same time. And until then, stay safe in Night City, everyone. I'll see you guys later. Bye, everyone.
Thanks for tuning in to the Cyberpunk Lorecast. This show is a part of the Robots Radio Network, smart podcasts for interesting people. If you'd like to help support the show, please tell a friend and leave a 5-star review on iTunes. If you'd like to get in contact, please send an email to cyberpunklorecast@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter at cyberpunklore. Also, join the community on the Robots Radio Discord. The link is in the show notes. The music on the show was written and performed by The Midnight and was used with their permission. Go check them out at themidnightofficial.com. Until next time, stay safe in Night City. We'll talk to you later.
You've been listening to a Robots Radio podcast. Smart shows for interesting people. Check out all the shows at robotsradio.net.
Ahoy there, ye landlubbers. Avast, my name is Captain Logan, and I'll be your guide out on the Sea of Thieves. If you love the idea of stealing treasure, cutting down cursed skeletons, fighting off krakens, and raiding forts filled to the brim with shinies, then Sea of Thieves is the game for you. Join me each week as I dive into the news and bring back the nuggets of information that any sailor worth their weight in salt would desire. You don't have to be a pirate legend to gain access to my podcast. Just search for Keelhauled, a Sea of Thieves podcast in your podcast app of choice, or head over to robotsradio.net or captainlogan.podbeam.com and get ready to set sail for adventure. Arr.
Do you love the Mass Effect series? And are you looking to learn even more about Mass Effect? The things that you didn't even know that you didn't know? Well, this is your host, Tom, or Robots, and me and my co-host, N7 Legend, do a show called The Mass Effect Lorecast. It is available on whatever podcatcher you're listening to this right now. We also do it live on twitch.tv/robotsradio, 10:30 Eastern, 7:30 Pacific on Sunday nights. So go look it up right now, The Mass Effect Lorecast. We'd love to have you join us.
Hi, welcome to Three Count Thoughts. Let me introduce the crew real quick.
Hi, I'm Maverick Stone.
I'm Romer.
And I'm Jaxus. Join us as we talk all things wrestling. Each week, we'll take a topic from the wrestling world, knock it around a bit, and then go over the week in wrestling from a strictly fan perspective. We can be found on all major podcast catchers. We can also be found at Three Count Thoughts on both YouTube and Twitter. Or you can send us an email using 3countthoughts@gmail.com. Okay, are you ready?
Ring the bell.